Now we're all sitting here, buzzing, full of impressions, plans, busy again inside and yet sitting, tuning into the simplicity of just, being here, being in this posture, knowing this buzz is going on, pulled at times into the plan, the thought, the image, but accessing the being, the knowing behind it, the mindfulness, the presence. It's more like a daily sitting. Savor the sense of being able to settle here, even with the buzzing. Underneath all that is our home right here. These bodies, this tender vulnerability of the heart. This extraordinary human capacity to be aware of what's happening while it's happening, both inside and outside. And just let the eyes open a little. Nothing else can change. Sitting here still, buzzing, breathing, on this floor of this room. We're still meditating. We're still being here knowingly. Let the eyes come up. Gently, not engaging them, not busy, being here. Feel the openness of being with each other. Let your eyes be open. Let your awareness be open. Receive this room, these friends around, your tenderness. Meditation isn't a thing. It's being here. Are you meditating or you're not meditating with your eyes open and aware of each other? The bell doesn't mean stop meditating. Means just change in the mode of meditation from sitting to walking. Doesn't mean start and stop. Meditation, stand in the middle of your life, right here. So I'm not going to ring the bell. I'm going to keep on talking. Keep being here. Makes it separate if I don't meditate. But in a moment, we're here. All day long. We both have some things we want to share about suggestions and encouragements as you go. Our last ways of offering you teachings as we let you go away. Do you remember all that time ago when we arrived? try and remember how it took you quite a number of hours before you actually connected with being here. Your bodies came first, and then your attention came in jerks, and your feelings began to be more available, and then you began to finally feel settled and connected. Remember? You couldn't just be here all full 100%. So it's exactly the same in reverse. Don't try and engage in all of it suddenly. It's hard. It's harder than when you come because it's so loud and rough and speedy, and there's so much that we can take in, and you're way more sensitive than you know. We've opened up, you know, we carry a whole lot of guarding, armoring front, you know, as we move about. And so yours is dissolved because you haven't needed to use it here. We've been the opposite. So don't suddenly try and change gear. You can, you would be able to, but it's exhausting, you get a headache, it's very unpleasant, there's no need. So be gentle. Today, tomorrow, spend many minutes on end with eyes closed. Not talking, not engaging, just keeping this coming in and coming out and coming back in again, settling, just as a respect for your nervous system, for one thing. There is no news that's new news that's happened while you've been quiet. That's not always the case. Sometimes some major event may have occurred and we will have told you about it so that you're prepared to, when you go back on the, whatever it is, news waves. One retreat I was teaching, the day before the end of the retreat was the Haitian earthquake. And it was such a devastation that we needed, of course, to tell you about it first, because in your vulnerability it was, you know, so enormous and so horrendous, and images and everything. Nothing earth-shattering has happened. We're all carrying on doing the same old things out there as well as in here, so you don't need to rush back to find out what have you missed. Don't try and attend to all the emails, do a few, and then stop and look around and be quiet, close your eyes, things like that. Drive in the slow lane. Be prepared that people will seem uncouth and stupid and clumsy and heedless. You will become one of them very soon. Don't hang on to this degree of sweetness and sensitivity. It's impossible, and you aren't failing in becoming more uncouth and more heedless. It's conditioned, and these are the conditions. We've made these conditions, and we've kept on being careful with these conditions and careful with each other, and they're not the conditions there. So we're not going to be the same. We are conditioned beings, you know, and so don't feel that there's a standard that you've lost, or there's something, certainly that it's your fault. It's just, it won't be like this. These are rare conditions, very weird conditions, actually, false conditions. So don't hang on to them. Don't idealize this. This is simply, you know, a laboratory that we've made, very rarefied, so we can be subtle, so we can explore things that aren't so available otherwise. So don't expect anything like that. The deep grooves in your brain that you've been growing are growing. The pathways are there, they're going to be growing. The other pathways are there, they're very strong. So be realistic, don't be idealistic, and don't set that then up as a standard to judge yourself by. It's unnecessary pain. The other thing that some of us will have a tendency towards, the less experienced ones in retreat, we get so enthused by the sweetness of the retreat that we want to tell everybody, beware. And it's totally sincere, and it's totally out of love and enthusiasm and happiness, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work unless there's a great degree of receptivity. If somebody really is receptive, available, curious, interested, they are eager to listen. It just doesn't work. It just goes, oh, that sounds fun. you know, and that, but the harshness of not landing in somebody and reverberating the way it is reverberating in you, it's not just that it doesn't work for them, it's it makes us really doubt that it was a real thing. It can feel like we were in some kind of there was something in the water. They were doing some weird thing to us. Did it really happen? You know, were you in some magic land? Or we can doubt it ourselves, our experiences. When someone, we get the feedback of like, oh yeah, that's, yeah, I know that, or something, or eyes rolling up, or, you know, listen, what I want to tell you, what I've been doing, and you're like, whoa. It can, if you are wanting people to get it along with you, it can really be unnerving, undermining. And so I always do this. You've heard me. Those who've been here for 17 times, when I've been here 17 times, will have heard me say 17 times, Jack Kornfield, for heaven's sake, spare your friends and family. Be a Buddha, not a Buddhist. Be whatever you are being. Care however you care. Answer questions. Resist the urge to proselytize. I know, I'm speaking from experience. Eyes rolling up, heads shaking. Those are my little tips about in the time of transition before you change gear, which you will fairly soon. And then how to sustain some of access to this awareness. So I have tips. I just have a bunch of tips, suggestions. I have a growing list of words beginning with S, and I'd like you to add to my list. So I'll give you my words. And each one I say, I want you to actually savor the meaning, the implication, so you can remember to access them yourself. Savor being one of them. You know what that means? That means like, what's the impact of whatever it is that's occurring? Let me really take a little bit of time to receive and savor that. Savor. Slow. Stop. Stand. When I was a midwife, one of the little things we would say, with great respect to any of you MDs in the audience, we'd say, doctors say, don't stand there, do something. And we say, don't do something, stand there. It's that wait and see. So stand sometime. Solitude. From time to time. Silence. Sigh. Soft. Soften, maybe. Verbs. Sense. And senses. In the Buddhist vocabulary, we talk about sense doors. I like to think of sense windows. I go out through doors, but things come in through windows, like light and bugs, sounds. Simple. Still. Any more words? S words anybody can think of? Supports your practice? Sangha. Sangha. Steady. Serene. Surrender. And the one I haven't said, what do you?
Same.
is sit. And I just want to then say a couple of things about sit. Can our sitting, I invite you to allow your sitting, regular sitting, daily sitting for minutes as best you can, so it becomes it supports itself, not be getting or doing anything. It's stopping getting and doing anything. It's letting go of the getting and the doing and the planning and the worrying and all of that, and just it's time out. It's a non-achieving, non-producing, non-creating rest for your system, where you soften, where you sigh, and you'll discover your senses are there already. You'll discover your body is here, it's breathing. Don't do it. Do it and then don't do it when you get there. Sit down and that's it. If you think of it in terms of a task, it will be increasingly low on the list of to-do things until it won't get attended to. Hopefully that will help you. And not just once a day, but little moments, stand, you know, sigh. Caroline just did a sigh. Sayadaw Tuyajaniya has said this little thing, which I love this little quick tip. It doesn't begin with S. It's Sokni Rinpoche. When he taught this, I'll never forget it. He was like, most of the time we're doing this with our attention, looking out through these eyes at, do this. Look inside. How is it in here? Such a little, okay, how is it in here? We're so dependent on the changing conditions. We think that when it is, however it is, then of course I'm going to respond. How am I with that? How is this responding to this? Just if we can do any of these things first, in any moment, remember any of these, then we can have some clarity to proact whatever's coming at us. If we don't, it will impact us and we will react. And when it's unpleasant, we will either shrink or shout or whatever, be triggered with no mindfulness. If we can take this moment of something of these, settle for a sec, sigh for a second, we then will choose how much to engage or what to say or how to deal with it. Those are my tips.
Somebody was asking in the questions something about discernment and judgment, how to work with judgment. And Joseph last March, I think, came to Montreal for a fundraiser for our organization, and he said something I had never heard from him. Saying that the way he got rid of judgment was by becoming aware of seeing, just seeing. So, you know, he would have the, oh, this person is like this, they shouldn't be like, seeing is happening. Just becoming aware of the very primary. And he said it was amazing how it would cut. Because otherwise it's in what is seen, you know, and the story around this, and just, oh, oh, seeing is happening, or hearing is happening. When I heard that, there was I really liked the kind of radical nature of that technique. So anyway, you might play with this if you remember. That's the thing with mindfulness. We have to remember. So that's one little thing about this. But the other way for me to work with judgment is to become really interested in, you know, so sometimes I'll have, I think, some kind of accuracy about something happening inside or outside, that I see a behavior of somebody. But what I call judgment is the layer of hate that I put on top. And if I can just invite myself to remove the layer of hate, maybe then it's discernment. Oh, this person is really agitated. It's factual, you know. I can see this. But there's not the layer of hate on top. And so I'm trying to track this in my mind. It's not easy to do, but just to see, like, I'm late, or I don't know, something, I'm taking too much space, or something like this. If I remove the layer of hate, and maybe it could, space being created, it could be really nice to invite their compassion or care. It could be the same kind of seeing what's happening, but with love, with care. So that's one way that I try to work with this. Become really aware, conscious, responsible, not guilty, responsible for the violence in my, you know, vision or contribution, something like this. And I think it's a interesting sport to have the clarity, maybe, but not with the hate, but rather with the kindness. It's a good mental or heart exercise. There's a couple of little things that always come to mind at the end of a retreat when it's the, you know, going home, a few words on going home. And one of them, I think, come from here. So I've carried that little story like all over in Europe and here and there. And I'm not sure it comes from here. I think it comes from here, but it definitely comes from Jeff. And so, and yet last night when you were telling about going on the sailboat with Utegenia, so I'll tell the story I tell all over the place and then we can correct it, maybe. But so what I say at the end of a retreat everywhere, I always think of Jeff, is I say, oh, I met this other practitioner, we were talking, and he said that one day Utegenia was in town and that he took him for a day on his boat, and it was great. And Jeff was really happy to report to Utegenia that he had established a regular practice. And he was really happy to report this. Like, it took me many years to establish a daily practice, and now it's established, and so I practice that amount of time every day. And Utegenia went like this. It's not going to be enough. You're going to have to do this 24 hours a day. Did that happen? Or I made... Oh, he was very much more flexible than than the story I tell. So, Okay, thank you for the clarification. So from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to sleep, so, you know, 1 hour a day, 2 hours a day is not enough for progress. And when I tell the story, I also said that you were a little when you said that, and then after you, it made sense to you somehow. Yeah. So that story is sailing all over. And the other thing also, at the end of a retreat a number of years back, I was teaching with Martine Batchelor, and she, during the whole retreat, she kept coming back with that question. It was in French. The question from the Zen, Korean Zen practice is, qu'est-ce que c'est? In French, qu'est-ce que c'est? What is this? What is this? So that's a way to, you know, not assume that we know what something is and to come closer. So she said, years and years of practicing with that question, what is this? Oh, fear. What is this? Breathing. To come closer. And she, during the whole retreat, she kept coming every morning, after, you know, what is this? What is this? Yeah. And so it was really, really present during the retreat. You know, I think everybody in their way were practicing with that question because she kept bringing it everywhere. And at the very end of the retreat, she said, oh, so this in Korean Zen is called the great question. The great question. What is this? And she said, but there's also the great courage. And she didn't say classically what was the great courage, but she said, the only thing she said about it is, for me, the great courage is to love oneself now, not postpone it, you know, to love oneself now. And yeah, that's been an intriguing teaching for me. Because at first when she said it, I thought, it's a little kind of, oh, love myself. That's how I received it. But later, you know, I thought about this. I thought, wow, the great courage to not postpone tenderness. So that's the advice I got on the way through others' stories and experiences. Voilà. Thank you.
Thank you. So what we'd like to do now is invite you to do another little exercise, if you want. It's not really an exercise. Connect with a group of four, maybe five, maybe three others. And for these next minutes, four would be better than five just because of timing, simply share two or three of your, or one, I'll just say this. I use the word, it's a classic word that we use, fruits of this retreat. Like some parts of this retreat that you want to honor, that you want to remember, that actually have meant something to you. Something landed, something came clearer, something. And just express it in, you know, your experience of it. By expressing it and being witnessed, it makes it even more accessible for you to remember. It was Rob Rabea, this teacher I've sat with in England, who says, use your insights. And he's meaning remember and re-savor the impact of them. And if you say them and are witnessed in saying them, you'll be able to access a little bit. It may be an insight, an understanding, something. And also when we hear each other's wisdom, I've just said, don't go proselytizing, don't tell, you know, but we really get it. So we actually will be growing from each other's understandings too. So it's sweet to do. So not the whole elaborate, and then I came into the hall, and then this, but just what some of your experience has been that's benefited you. So just take, we're going to take 10 minutes. So there's, you know, only a few sentences each person. Okay, and do in a non-discussy way, just in a way of witnessing and acknowledging. So that's what we'd like you to do. So getting to the very last parts of our retreat together. For quite a long time, when I would go teaching different places, the retreat would end, and then I'd go wherever it was and collect the dana. And it always felt a bit weird to kind of like, is anybody looking? Am I supposed to take this now? You know, it's like, just so awkward. And so I've changed how that works in recent years, and I just, without a big elaboration around it, I just think it's really sweet to have somebody, invite somebody, whoever would like to actually, on behalf of everybody else, actually give us the dana so we don't have to go and scoop it, if you know what I mean. So if somebody, somebody would feel like coming and offering it on behalf of the rest of you, it would be a beautiful thing. I don't know if Caroline, you want to be that one? Yeah. Who would like, is anybody especially would like that? Yeah.
It's really bad. This one is thinner, but there may be more money. And a card, and these candles, maybe you would, one, like a red and orange one. Each, I don't know where they came from.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next and last thing. So I start every sentence, I don't know if you'd noticed, but I noticed since teaching with Steve Armstrong that I start every sentence with so, because he does that. So thank you, Steve. One last thing I'd like to do while we're here, but then of course, as we all know, we're going to do some cleaning and then we're going to have a final gratitude circle before we all leave. However, there are a considerable number of us, you, who need, because of being bound by ferries, to not be in the final circle. And so I'd like those people, I know all the people going to Vashon, is that the right island? Lopez Island. Why, I keep confusing you anyway. So there's Lopez folks and there's a couple of other folks with ferry timetables who won't make the final circle. So would you mind just, maybe just stand up so we can see who you are, so we can at least say goodbye to you. And Steve, you're leaving. So Steve's on his time restraint, so Steve also. So our dear friends, travel safely. We love you. So glad you were here. Without you being here, it wouldn't have been the same. Many blessings. Thank you. Okay.